All right, we're ready for Leviticus chapters 5 through 8. This is our outline, one of the outlines we're following. We're trying to follow two, which is a little unusual, but anyway, we have in this one, chapters 1 through 7, the offerings and sacrifices, and then we're going to get into chapter 8 tonight, and the next section here is 8 through 10 on the priesthood, so we'll start into that. Then we'll look at laws for daily living, the Day of Atonement, and then miscellaneous laws. Now, one of the interesting things about our transition tonight is when we make it through chapter 7, we've got through one of the more difficult sections. And by that I mean we're talking about the offerings and sacrifices. I would expect many of us are having trouble remembering the difference in the burnt offering, the sin offering, and the trespass offering, and what's the distinction. Which one of those could you eat the meat of? Which was it only the priest could eat, and which of it was to totally and totally be burned. You may remember for tonight's class, but unlikely 3 weeks from now you're going to remember that. So when we get through chapter 7, which we're about to in a moment, we're going through 5, 6, and then 7, and we're going to get into 8, we will have got through that difficult section. Now, there are going to be some things that we may get lost a little bit in, but we're going to, I think, easily understand the miscellaneous laws, the Day of Atonement, the daily living, clean and unclean animals, etc., beyond chapter 7. Does that make sense? So we're getting over a hump tonight in our study, I think. At least in my mind, we are. This is Wiersbe's outline, the God's provision for sin. We're going to finish the sacrifice section, get into the priesthood section, and then there were precepts for separation. We're going to better understand that holiness as we get into chapter 11 a little bit later, and then his promises for success. Let's review where we've been. Chapter 1, what was it about? Yeah, laws of burnt offerings. And what I hope you'll remember, I really don't expect you a year from now to say, oh yeah, chapter 2 is about, well, you go ahead and tell me what chapter 2 is about. Yeah, it's a grain offering. I don't expect you to remember that versus chapter 1 being the burnt offering, but if we get familiar with where things are found in Leviticus, later in the Old Testament when a reference is made to a burnt offering, we know to go back hunting in the first 7 chapters, don't we? And we'll hunt and peck through that till we find the burnt offerings and find references there. And one of the benefits of flagging, as I call it, as we're in one chapter and flagging another chapter, laying chapter 2 into chapter 7, so that when you find that later on, that you know to go back and check this other chapter. Hopefully you're doing that. Chapter 3, what's it about? Peace offering, and then finally chapter 4, sin offering. All right. What's chapter 5 about? Yeah, trespass offering, and also something else dealt with there. Bleeds over into chapter 6, restitution. What's chapter 6? We're on question 1, part B. Chapter 6, what's Leviticus 6? All right, it deals with restitution as an outflow of chapter 5, kind of one of those unfortunate chapter divisions, I think. Remembering those are put there by man, so that's not a reflection on inspiration. That probably the first few verses of chapter 6 should have gone with chapter 5, but be that as it may, we'll deal with that. Chapter 7, what's it about? Yeah, more of the offerings and the eating of blood. And now we shift gears. The offerings are over. Chapter 8 deals with what? Yeah, the ordination of the priest. And so here's the consecration, ordination, institution, how whatever you want to word that, of Aaron and his sons, and now the priesthood is rolling and ready to go. Does that make sense? Tabernacle has been erected. Now we're ready to roll with everything else. Now, this is just a listing of the things we find in chapters 5 through 8, from the trespass offering, the burnt offering, grain offering, sin offering, and the peace offering, and the consecration. We're going to look more specifically at the chapters a little closer here. So here's chapter 5. I call it simply trespass offerings and restitution. Now, that restitution is going to bleed over into chapter 6 and verses 1 to 7. Again, I mentioned that's one of those unfortunate chapter divisions, I think. So we'll get underway with chapter 5. Question number 2, what is the trespass offering? Say again. All right, it deals with unintentional sin. It does also deal with restitution. We'll draw a distinction. We're going to save that just for a moment. We'll get to that in a moment between the trespass offering and a sin offering. Are they the same or are they different? What differences are there? We'll draw that distinction here in a moment. So let's get underway with the trespass offering. And the highlighted in blue section is where you find more information. And again, the value of making a marginal note, either electronically in your tablet or in the margin of your text, will be for future study. So that when a question of the burnt offering or trespass offering comes up, for example, and you jump over and find it at chapter 5, you know to go over and look at chapter 7, that this is going to give you more information. Then at chapter 7, we're going to flag chapter 5 to find more information. Does that make sense? That's going to be helpful to us in the future. Because I find marginal notes sometimes, I think, why is this passage mentioned in the context? Go over and look, oh, that helps me to understand this passage better. And that's why I do that. All right, let's get underway here. And verses, we'll come to chapter 7 a little bit later, and we'll flag some things there when we get there. But just put that in the margin of your text. I start off here, or the text starts off, as I've outlined it here, some examples of the kinds of sin that are under consideration in the trespass offering. Again, we'll draw that distinction. Let's just focus on the trespass offering, assuming there is a distinction between that and the sin offering. We'll get to that more in just a moment. So there are three categories of sins that he mentions. What's the first one in verse 1? When you fail to testify under oath. So if you hear something, if you hear the utterance of an oath, and you have been a witness, I'm going to paraphrase, I'm not giving the exact words of verse 1. You're a witness, and you've seen or known of a matter, and you've been put under oath, and you don't tell what you should have told, then you bear guilt. Does that make sense? That's one of the things for which a trespassing offering should be offered. There's a second illustration or example. What's it? Touching something unclean. It might be an unclean carcass, a carcass of an unclean animal. What else might it be that's unclean? Yeah, an unclean creeping thing, insects, or it might be some unclean livestock. And then he becomes guilty, or he may have touched, verse 3, a human uncleanness of whatever sort it may be, and it be hidden from him. When he realizes it, then he shall be guilty. All right, let's stop and talk a little bit about this thing being hidden from him. It's mentioned several times in the text, like at verse 2, verse 3, if it be hidden from him. I'm reading from the New King James, and as you know, you've heard me mention many times, the New King James is updated every year. So your New King James may word that differently. Some of them translate that he is unaware of it, hidden from him in the sense he's unaware of it. The NET, which is a little more wooden than some of the other translations, he did not realize it. So how could you, for example, touch something unclean and not realize it? Well, it might have been, one commentator mentions, in the dark. You might not have been careless. Here is something unclean. You should have walked around and you touched it. You didn't know you were getting that close to it, but you were forbidden to touch that, and you did nonetheless, and he's unaware of that. So I'm learning a very practical lesson here. There are times that a person may violate the law of God and it be hidden from him in the sense he's unaware that what he did was wrong. Does that make sense? And so the law of uncleanness had to do with coming with that. God didn't have to say, now you need to be very extremely careful. If God said, don't touch anything unclean, that implies, finish my sentence, that you need to be very careful. There we go. You need to be very careful. Doesn't that make sense? You know, what if we had some live wire sticking out of the plugs of the wall and we said, now everybody need to be careful, don't touch any of those, and somebody walks carelessly by. When we said there were live wires, that implied you need to be very careful. And so God's warning, don't touch anything unclean, that means you need to be very careful. And so you do that and you're unaware that you touched it, you're still guilty nonetheless. All right. Now at verse 4, here's another example. What's that example? gives an oath, he gives a vow, he makes a promise, and notice he does it thoughtlessly. What does that suggest to you? Careless, absolutely. He carelessly makes a vow, and whether it's to pronounce an oath to do good or to do evil, in other words, I'm going to do this or I'm not going to do that, whatever promise, in either direction it goes, and he doesn't fulfill the vow, what does God think about that? He sinned. He's guilty. All right, here's a practical lesson. Let's get ahead of ourselves because we probably won't get that far to our practical lessons. And that is, I'm learning from that a vow or a promise God takes serious. How many times have you, or I've done it, or maybe someone else we've dealt with, will make a promise. I'll tell you what I'll do, and we make a promise. I'm going to do thus and so, and then we forget about fulfilling that. God doesn't think much of that. A yes ought to be yes, and a no should be no. I learned a very practical thing. Now, verse 5, what's he to do? If any one of these sins, and he becomes now aware of it, that I didn't testify under oath, I came in contact with something unclean, I made a vow, and I didn't fulfill it, and confess it, acknowledge that. He has to acknowledge that, and then there's to be the trespass offering. All right. Now let's get underway with the trespass offering, and then I'm going to draw a distinction between that and the sin offering. Let's talk about the offering itself in verses 6 to 13, and then we're going to come more details in chapter 7. What does 6 to 13 tell us about the trespass offering? He shall bring a trespass offering. Now, trespass is a sin, and a sin is a trespass. So you would think they're the same thing. We'll save any distinction later. Just we'll get to that when we finish this chapter. Yes, a female from the flock that could be either lamb or a goat, and he brings it as a sin offering. But if he's not able to bring a lamb, what does that suggest? He may not be able to afford that. And so God makes provision for those who are poor. What can he bring? Two turtle doves or two pigeons, and he can bring those. And what's to be done with those? According to verse 8, he brings them to the priest. And that's for, notice he uses the term trespass and sin offering interchangeably, something to be learned from that. And he shall not divide it completely, and he'll sprinkle the blood on the side of the altar, and then the offering on the second as a burnt offering in the prescribed manner. But what if he can't do that? What does he bring? He can bring ephah, a fine flour. And ephah is about a half to three-fourths a gallon of fine flour, and put no oil in it, and he puts frankincense on it, and brings it for a sin offering. What's to be done with it? 12 and 13. Yeah, take a handful and burn it on the altar according to the offering made by fire, and it's a sin offering. There's your connection with the sin offering, and the priest will make atonement for him, and he shall be forgiven. And what about the rest of it that's not used? It belongs to the priest. All right, we've already seen that principle before. Now notice, we're about to begin this restitution section, so keep that in the back of your mind, and let's draw a little distinction here between the sin offering and the trespass offering. Some of the distinctions that have been drawn, some writers have drawn some distinction between the two that I don't see. They make a distinction, I'm thinking, I'm not sure I see that distinction. But I do think there is a distinction. They are essentially the same sacrifice. Why? Because sin and trespass is the same thing, is it not? And they're used interchangeably in this context. I just flagged that for you. That he talks about a trespass offering, then when he offers the sin offering, it is a sin offering. Let's go to chapter 7 and in verse 7. Remember, chapter 7 is going to give us some insight. So this will be helpful to us. We'll get this a little later. But let's just go ahead and focus at verse 7. The trespass offering is like the sin offering. The law of one, there is one law for them both. Well, what did I learn from that? I learned if it talks about them both, that means they're distinct. They're not the same thing. If they're the identical, the same thing, they're not both. It's like if I talked about the first man and Adam, I don't talk about them both. That's the same man. Does that make sense? So they are distinct. Though that verse also told me they are essentially the same. In other words, there's very little difference between them. So what is the difference? Here's the difference that I can find. The sin offering seems to be against God and God only. Where the trespass offering has to do with sin that is not only against God, but there seems to be some involvement with man. He didn't testify in his relationship. There's something to do with others. He came into contact with something else, something clean. He failed to fulfill vows toward others. So there's that distinction. Another distinction is the blood of the sin offering was to be put upon the horns of the altar, where the blood of the trespass offering was poured around the base of the altar. The sin offering, there was nothing said about restitution, where in the trespass offering, we're about to read about restitution. Does that make sense? Are there more distinctions? Perhaps so. Others have made some distinctions that I don't see. But I at least see those distinctions. There is some difference. Though they are essentially the same sacrifice, there is a little bit of difference. And that's about as far as I can go with that. Does that make sense? All right. If it doesn't, don't ask me to say any more, because I just told you all I knew and I made up part of that. So chapter 7, verse 7 gives us some insight. All right. Now let's go into the restitution. Let's go to question number 4. What were the requirements about restitution? Add a fifth to the full value. All right. We'll see that and flag that as we go along. Let's start at verse 15. If a person commits a trespass and sins unintentionally, here's that concept we've already seen before, in regard to holy things. So if you're following the outline, verses 14 to 16 deals restitution concerning holy things. So how could you, let's go ahead and finish verse 15. Now I'm going to raise a question about it. That he shall bring to the Lord a trespass offering without blemish according to the valuation, etc. We'll come back to that valuation. How could you sin with reference to holy things? It is not specified in this immediate context. Some have suggested that he may have done something like failing to tithe. You're failing and sinning with reference to holy things. Or it may be that he ate something, ate of some holy thing that he was not supposed to. Here was the meat that was not supposed to be eaten, and he ate of that. So he's trespassed with a holy thing. Or it may be that he offered a bull or a lamb with blemish that was to be without blemish. Those are just some possibilities of how you could sin with reference to holy things. And if he does that, then he's to bring this offering. Now notice the trespass offering. There is to be, let's see, verse 15, he's to bring the animal with your valuation in shekels of silver according to the sanctuary as a trespass offering. Now, we're not here yet, but when we get to chapter 27, you might want to flag chapter 27, and I could give you a whole list of verses like 8 and 12 and 14, 18 and 23, but just flag 27. That Leviticus 27 is where the valuation is given, and if the valuation wasn't specified in Leviticus 27, who determines the valuation? The priest. The priest determines that. That's what Leviticus 27 will tell us, and I know we haven't got there. But just flag that for future reference so that how did they determine what the valuation was? The priest was to do that, Leviticus 27. All right. Now, at verse 16, he was to add, Stephen just told us a moment ago, one-fifth, 20% of the valuation. Does that make sense? So there is some restitution. Now, I'm learning a very practical lesson for us that there are times when God expects us. Now, I know this is not New Testament law, but the Bible teaches some principle of restitution. If I steal from you, what am I to do with that? Not only repent of it, but keep the money? No, make some restitution. I do something in return. That's a New Testament principle as well. All right, now let's talk about violating the commands of God. Now, in holy things, you're violating the commands of God, but he specifically mentions that at verse 17. What's to be done? He brings His trespass offering, a ram without blemish. It's always a ram, according to the trespass offering. And he shall be forgiven.
and is a trespass offering. And notice that he nearly ends nearly every section concerning the trespass offering. He shall be forgiven. He shall be forgiven. So God has a way of redeeming the people. All right. Let's. Say again. Yes. And he's still to make the sacrifice. And so I'm learning a very practical thing that even when we sin ignorantly, I'm committing a sin. I did not know this to be wrong, and yet I'm doing that, it's still held accountable and there needs to be a sacrifice. Good point. All right, let's go to chapter 6. Now, let's just pretend verses 1 to 7 is a continuation of chapter 5, which is really what it is, because this is still talking about restitution. So what he's talking about, let's go back and catch this, in holy things, in violating the commands of God, the third section, if it was chapter 5, I would call this moral fraud. Moral fraud would be what I would call this section. Now, he talks about if he sins, commits a sin in lying, and he mentions four categories here. Let's list them. This is found in verse 2 and verse 3. If he's lied about something committed to his trust, every one of these has to do with fraud. He's lying. It's a moral issue. It's fraud. Or he lies about a pledge. And so he's dishonest and he lies about a pledge. Or he lies about robbery or something taken from his neighbor. How would he lie? Well, I didn't take it. He took it from his neighbor. He stole. So there's dishonesty to go around, plenty to go around in this context. Or he lies about something that was lost that he found and lies about that. In other words, I take that to be he found something that someone's lost, knew it was lost, and he takes it for his own. It'd be like you finding somebody's wallet and we've told you we're looking for so-and-so's wallet and you take it and stick it as your own in your pocket. That's dishonest. And then when we find the wallet, no, I didn't find that. That's mine. That's this kind of lying. So is there forgiveness for that? Well, yes. But what's he to do? Verse 4. He restore what was stolen. What else? Restore its full value, verse 5, and add a fifth. And he shall bring a trespass offering, verse 6, a ram. And according to his valuation, where am I going to find information about the valuation? Leviticus 27, yeah. Might flag that there if you hadn't already done that. And then the priest will make atonement for him and he'll be forgiven. I'm paraphrasing that, of course. All right, now let's get into the offerings here that is giving us, this is something we've already flagged from chapters 1 and 2 and 4, 3 and 4. Because we've already talked about the burnt offering. This is, we have a little more information. So what we're going to do is flag chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 4, and see if we find any more information there. Let's talk about this burnt offering of verses 8 through 13. Let's get what we find in this text, then we'll go over to chapter 1 and just kind of give a quick summary. What do we learn from chapter 6, 8 to 13 about a burnt offering? Stays on the altar all night. Fire is kept burning. Now, this wasn't mentioned in chapter 1, by the way. So you might flag chapter 1 in the margin of your text. That chapter 1 tells us more information. That's where we saw more. Well, that's where we were introduced to it earlier. Well, verse 10 says that this was to stay all night on the altar. Then the priest the next morning gets dressed and puts on what? Puts on his linen garments, very good, and the linen trousers, and he takes the ashes, and then he puts them where? Beside the altar. Then he goes, changes his clothes, and then he goes, takes that outside the camp, and puts it in carries it out to a clean place. And notice it, verse 12, verse 13, and also back at verse 9, three verses here tell us the fire is kept burning perpetual. That's that altar, that big square altar, that big altar right outside the door of the tabernacle. Make sense? Just as you came into the courtyard, that's that big altar. Altar of burnt offerings. A perpetual fire shall be burnt upon it. And all right, let's go over to chapter 1. Just get a quick, let's just set our eyes on chapter 1. and see what you have highlighted there or marked. This is that same burnt offering. It could be of the herd, it was to be without blemish. It could be of the flocks, verse 10, again without blemish, or it could be of the birds, again without blemish. We have more details of how that's to be offered, what part was to be burnt, what was not to, what was to be done with that. The whole sacrifice was burnt, and we talked about how that was symbolic of complete surrender of the worshiper, it seemed to be verse 9. So chapter 1 gives more details, but so does chapter 6 give us some details we didn't see in chapter 1. All right, let's move to the grain offering. And we're going to find more information where? Chapter 2. So you might flag chapter 2 here. What do we see about the grain offering? It's divided into two sections here. There's the grain offering itself, and then there seems to be a reference, verses 19 to 23, at the consecration of the priest. We'll come to that in a second. Let's talk about the grain offering, 14 to 18. What do you see? They'll take a handful of fine flour with its oil and its frankincense, and they bring it and offer it, and it's burnt, and then the remainder of it shall be for Aaron and his sons to eat. And it shall not be baked with leaven. We already saw that in chapter 2. And all the males among the sons of Aaron may eat it as a statute forever. We might go over and flag chapter 2. Most of the chapter was devoted to the grain offering. Remember that? And we saw about it being baked in an oven, baked with a covered pan, baked in a pan. The point of it seems to be that the worshiper was celebrating that God is the giver of all life. It was not to be with leaven, etc. Make sense? Chapter 2 will give you more details. All right, now let's talk about the consecration for the priest. Right here, verses 19 to 23. What do you see here? Why do I say this is for the consecration of the priest? Because verse 20. Verse 20 said, "This is the offering of Aaron and his sons, which they shall offer to the Lord, beginning on the day in which he is appointed." And so they would offer 1/10 of an ephah of flour of daily grain. All right. Not a lot of more information is given there. And the priest from among, this comes up as a sweet-smelling savor. In interest of time, I'm trying to move on to the next one. But verse 23 said, "Every grain offering shall be wholly burned, and it shall not be eaten." And so this was to be offered before God and burned up in its whole. Let's talk about the sin offering to finish this chapter. And then we'll get ready to go to the last chapter on the offerings. What do you see about the sin offering? What do we learn from chapter 6, 24 to 30? Very similar to what we've been talking about in the trespass offering. This was a sin offering, and the place where the burnt offering is killed before the Lord is most holy. The priest offers it, and the priest who offers it shall eat it. In the holy place it shall be eaten. And everyone who touches it must be holy. I don't think that means, in some translations say that he shall be holy, as if he touches it, he becomes holy. I take it that the text is saying he needs to be holy in order to touch it and consume that, is what that's really telling us. So everyone who touches it must be holy, verse 27. And the earthen vessels which is boiled in shall be broken. Verse 29, all males among the priests may eat it. But what do you learn from verse 20, or verse 30? This is kind of new information, at least new compared to chapter 4. No sin offering from which any blood is brought into the tabernacle. Now go back to chapter 4. We made a note about that. Perhaps you didn't. It might be a good time to do that at chapter 4. Chapter 4 is about the sin offering, and it talks about if an individual sins or if the whole congregation sins. And there was distinction, and if a ruler sins, any of the common people sin, this is the sin offering for those. We made a note, at least I encourage you to make a note, at chapter 4, that if the blood is taken into the tabernacle, it couldn't be eaten. But if it was poured around the altar, it could. Remember that distinction? Where did we learn that? We learned that from chapter 6, 26 to 30. That's where we are now. So that's where we got that information. We just picked that up right here in this section. So if the blood is taken into the sanctuary, can't eat it. If it's poured around the altar, you could. There was that distinction. So later on, you may come across some, why could they not eat of this sacrifice? Well, you've got a note at chapter 4. You'll have that same note at chapter 6, what that distinction is. All right, let's see if we can make it through chapter 7. This is our last of the hump of the chapters on the offerings. I know this is a little, for some, this is, you've got it down. And others of us, we struggle with keeping this all separated. That's all right. So here's more information about the trespass offering. Now, when we were in chapter 5 just a few moments ago, we flagged chapter 7. Guess what? We need to flag chapter 5 now. So we might make a note, chapter 5, verses 1 to 13 on this trespass offering. And notice a moment ago we skipped chapter 3 in flagging chapters. That's because we're going to pick that up right here at verse 11. All right? So let's talk about the trespass offering. Here's the trespass offering. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on looking more for information that we don't already know. What do you see in chapter 7, 1 to 10 about the trespass offering? Its blood will be sprinkled around the altar, verse 2. Say again. The fat is to be offered. Very good. And since the blood is not taken into the sanctuary, what happens at verse 6? It be eaten. Every male among the priests may eat, and it shall be eaten in the holy place. Now here's verse 7. If you didn't flag that a moment ago, you might underline this. This gives you information to help you with chapter 5 and help you with chapter 7. The trespass offering is like the sin offering. You say, it seems like the same thing. Well, that's what God said. It is a sin offering, but they are distinct because he refers to them as both. And the priest makes atonement. So is it a sin offering? Yes. But there is some distinction, as we've already flagged. Now notice at verse 9, every grain offering that is baked, the priest who offers it let me back up just a little bit. What am I looking for? The trespass offering is like that, and the priest shall make atonement. And the priest who offers it, I'm at verse 8, anyone's burnt offering, that priest shall have it for himself, the skin of the burnt offering that he offered, and every grain offering that is baked in the oven and is prepared shall be the priest who offers it. In other words, he gets that. But notice with reference to that grain offering, there was no requirement, at least I don't remember seeing one, of that being eaten in the holy place where the meat was. Does that make sense? There was a requirement. That's to be eaten in the holy place. There's no requirement with reference to the grain, to my knowledge. I didn't see it. If it's there, flag that for me and we'll catch that. All right, now let's go to the peace offering now at verse 11. We're going to flag what chapter? Chapter 3 gives us more information. So let's go back to chapter 3 just quickly. There was the peace offering. There we learned that it was to be, you could offer it of the herd, you could offer it of the flock. It was to be without blemish. That it seemed to be a celebration, not in order to obtain peace, as in a sin offering to obtain forgiveness, but a celebration of peace. And so where do we get that information? We got that from chapter, we see that implied in chapter 3. We learn more in chapter 7 right here. And so you might underline the statements about thanksgiving. For example, in verse 12, you'll see it again at verse 15 and two or three other places, that this is a peace offering. In verses 11 to 15, it might be a peace offering for thanksgiving. That is, it's a celebration. And so it tells us what's to be offered with it, verse 13. And what's to be done with it, verse 14. Shall offer one cake as a heave offering before the Lord. It shall belong to the priest who sprinkles the blood. We'll talk more about a heave offering if time, if we get time to do that. Let's start at verse 16. Now, we didn't see much about this in the peace offering section of chapter 3. But here is a vow or voluntary. What does that suggest to you? Let's forget the vow. We'll come back to that. A voluntary sacrifice. Absolutely correct. There is no requirement. For example, there are sacrifices. If you committed the sin, you need to offer the trespass offering. So why am I offering it? Because God told me to. I'm commanded. I'm expected to. Here is a sacrifice that's of your free will offering. It's a voluntary sacrifice. There is not a requirement for that. And so there may be a peace offering, a celebration offering, that's a voluntary, or it could be a vow. It might be in order to fulfill a vow, like the Nazarite vow of number 6. Is that exactly what it's talking about? I don't know. Maybe that would be included. Maybe there are other vows. Maybe someone's wanting to make a promise and offer a celebration sacrifice for that. So if he does that, here's what's to be done, and here how that's to be offered. So I'm going to move on to verse 19 to 21, still talking about those that peace offering. What do you learn in 19, 20, and 21? It has to do with rules about clean and unclean. The flesh that touches anything unclean shall not be eaten, and it shall be burned. And the person who eats flesh that is of the sacrifice of a peace offering that belongs to the Lord, while he is unclean, he's cut off. And so, in other words, God had strict rules. I'm not expecting you to remember all of that. God had strict rules concerning clean and unclean. And so nothing's to be touched that's unclean. If you're unclean while you're offering the sacrifice, be cut off from the people. Very strict rules concerning that. All right, now let's move on to talk about the blood and the fat and the meat. And so there's only one verse that we flag as a parallel, and that's in chapter 3:17 to this whole section here. So let's see what we've got. God gave instructions they were not to eat of any of the, first thing, verse 23, fat. Now what's interesting is that didn't forbid, that didn't mean that fat was forbidden for all uses. How do I know? Verse 24. And the fat of the beast that dies naturally and the fat of that which is torn by wild beasts may be used in any other way. What's he talking about? I don't know. Maybe in seasoning, maybe in cooking, or I don't know. But that was not to be eaten, but that didn't say that it was useless and couldn't be used at all. Does that make sense? But you by no means eat it. So you may use it in another way, but don't eat it. What else could not be eaten? Verse 26. Blood. Since both of these, the fat and the blood, were an integral part of the sacrifice, that seems to be the focus here. But there's another reason why the blood was not to be eaten. Leviticus 17 says, life is in the blood. But that's not mentioned here. This seems to be focused more on the sacrifice. These were integral parts of the sacrifice. So don't eat the blood. That's to be either put on the altar or poured around the base of the altar. The fat's to be burned. Don't eat that. Now, let's move on to the portion for Aaron and his sons in chapter 7, beginning of verse 28. What's this talking about? This is how the priest got much of what they got to eat was from some of the sacrifices. So Moses spoke to Aaron, the Lord spoke to Moses, and tell them that the one who offers a peace offering, let him bring his offering, and his hand shall bring the offering made by fire, and the fat fat with the breast, he shall bring and wave it as a wave offering. We'll come back to that. But the breast shall be Aaron's and his son. And then there is a heave offering, and the right thigh shall be his part. We've already talked about this earlier in Leviticus about the heave offering in Exodus, by the way. I believe it's Exodus 29. The wave offering would be an offering that would be raised up in wave before the Lord, where a heave offering is lifted up. It's symbolic of giving this to the Lord. And though this was waved before the Lord or given to the Lord, the breast and the thigh of these animals would be given to Aaron and his sons. They could eat of that. I want to drop down to verse 37 because we want to get chapter 8 here if we can. We basically end this section saying this is the law of the burnt offering, grain offering, trespass, consecration, and sacrifice and peace offerings. All right, we're over the hump of all the offerings. If you got kind of confused in that, we're ready to move on. Make sense? We know where to go to get that information. Not expecting you to remember all that, but we're ready to move on from that. Let's see if we can get chapter 8. So here's chapter 8. Here's the consecration of Aaron and his sons. In other words, the tabernacle has been erected, and all the laws have been laid out for the sacrifices. Now we don't have the priesthood in place. We have them appointed. As far as Aaron's going to be the high priest, etc. So we're going to have to quickly get chapter 8. So they put the garments, verses 1 to 9, on Aaron. And so they take a bull as a sin offering. Verse 2, I'm just going to flag highlighted verses. Verse 5, Moses said to the congregation, this is what the Lord commanded to be done. In other words, Moses is just a spokesman. That's all he is. Much like a preacher preaching the gospel, it's not him. He's telling you what the Lord said. And so he's not the one that thought of it. He didn't think of the great things. The Lord did. He's just the spokesman. That's all Moses is doing. And so they put all the garments on him. Now then, verses 10 to 13, what's done to the tabernacle and to Aaron? They anointed him. And so they took the oil and they anointed the tabernacle, and it was sanctified and sprinkled some of it on the altar seven times and poured some of it on Aaron's head, and he brought Aaron's sons and put tunics on them and hats on them, etc. Now verse 14 starting. There was the sacrifice of the bull and the ram and the basket of unleavened bread. And what do they do with that? Moses killed it. Moses is serving basically in the role that Aaron's going to take. Kill the bull and took the blood and put some of it on the horns of the altar and purified the altar. In other words, he's dedicating the items that are to be used in the tabernacle and in the service and the tabernacle itself. Then verse 18, the ram was given as a burnt offering, and Aaron and his sons laid their hands. In other words, they're being purified. Look at verse 22. The second ram was killed. What did he do with the blood from the second ram? Took and put some of the blood on Aaron's right ear, his right thumb of his right hand, and the big toe of his right foot. Why all of that? Now, we've already talked about this earlier in another passage, Exodus 29. So, the right side, Colin Dalich makes an excellent observation. The right side is the principal side of man, and the ear would represent the hearing, and thus he's to hear the commands of God. The hand is with which he discharged the function to do the will of God, and the feet that he might walk correctly in the sanctuary or sanctified walk before God. That makes sense? So here's the dedication of the priest. And then they take this wave offering, verse 27, and wave it before the Lord, and the heave offering as well, just as we saw in the previous chapter. So, and then the flesh was to be eaten. And I'm driving to get down to 33 to 36. We saw this in Exodus 29. What happens now? In other words, Aaron has been anointed, sacrifice has been made to cleanse them, they're purified and ready to do the work of priest. Stay there 7 days. And chapter 29 of Exodus says they were to be daily sacrifices during that time. Does that make sense? We don't see that here, but daily sacrifices during that time. And so they stay there for 7 days and seven nights and keep the charge of the Lord. And Aaron and his sons, look at verse 36, did all the Lord had commanded them. And now, chapter 9, the work of the priesthood begins. We now have a high priest. And I'm talking about in the Old Testament. Is if you were living there and this was live, we now have the tabernacle erected, the place of worship is set up, and we have a high priest and we have a priesthood. They haven't done a thing yet. We're about ready to begin that. Make sense? The hump of the sacrifices and keeping up with all those and all of that, all of those things is over. It's going to get a little better as we go forward from here. We're going to stop right there.